This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Our Iceberg is Melting, Changing and Succeeding Under Any Conditions by John Cotter and Holger Rathgeber. Read for you by Oliver Wyman.
Forward by Spencer Johnson, M.D. On the surface, this wonderful book appears to be a simple fable that is easy to understand, but that is just the tip of the proverbial iceberg. Working with John Cotter at the Harvard Business School, I learned that he knows more about changing organizations than anyone, anywhere. Leaders and managers around the world have read his highly respected book, Leading Change, and have discovered that using his 8 steps is the best way to ensure a successful organizational change. What does that have to do with most of us? Well, with Our Iceberg is Melting, everyone working in any kind of organization, and that is most people, can now discover how to use the same 8 steps and enjoy more success in these changing times. Professor Cotter and his equally creative co-author, Holger Rathgeber, let us see how a group of penguins, in adverse conditions, use the steps seemingly without knowing it. Whether you work in a business or the business of life, everyone from CEOs to high school students can gain from what each takes from this story. As you enjoy listening to what follows, you may want to ask yourself, what is my iceberg? And how can I use what I discover in the story? And then consider sharing it with others you work with. After all, things usually turn out better when everyone is on the same page.
Welcome. Handle the challenge of change well, and you can prosper greatly. Handle it poorly, and you put yourself and others at risk. All too often, people and organizations don't see the need for change. They don't correctly identify what to do or successfully make it happen or make it stick. Businesses don't. School systems don't. Nations don't. We have studied the challenge of change for decades. We know the traps into which even very smart people fall. We know the steps that can assure group success, and we will show you what we have found. Our method is showing, much more than telling, and showing with the method that has helped more people learn over the centuries than any other single technique, the fable. Fables can be powerful because they take serious, confusing, and threatening subjects and make them clear and approachable. Fables can be memorable, unlike so much of the information that bombards us today and is forgotten tomorrow. They can stimulate thought, teach important lessons, and motivate anyone, young or old, to use those lessons. In our modern, high-tech world, we can easily forget this simple yet profound truth. The fable that follows was inspired by John Cotter's award-winning research on how successful change really happens. All of us encounter the basic issues in the story. Few of us encounter highly effective ways of dealing well with those issues. If you know much about the setting in which we have placed our story, Antarctica, you'll see that life for our penguins is not exactly as you would find it on a National Geographic documentary. Fables are like that. If you think a fun story must be for young children, you'll soon see this book is about real-life problems that frustrate nearly everyone in organizations. Our iceberg will never melt. Once upon a time, a colony of penguins was living in the frozen Antarctic on an iceberg near what we call today Cape Washington. The iceberg had been there for many, many years. It was surrounded by a sea rich in food. On its surface were huge walls of eternal snow that gave penguins shelter from dreadful winter storms. As far back as any of the penguins could remember, they had always lived on that iceberg. "This is our home," they would tell you, if you could ever find their world of ice and snow. They would also say, quite logically from their perspective, "And this will always be our home." Where they lived a waste of energy kills. Everyone in the colony knew they needed to huddle together to survive. So they had learned to depend on each other. They often behaved like a big family, which, of course, can be both good and bad. The birds were truly beautiful. Called emperor penguins, they were the largest of 17 types of Antarctic animals that seem perpetually to wear tuxedos. 268 penguins lived in the colony. One of them was Fred. Fred looked and acted much like the others. You would probably describe him as either cute or dignified, unless you really dislike animals. But Fred was different from most penguins in one very important way. Fred was unusually curious and observant. Other penguins went hunting for creatures in the sea, quite necessary since there was no other food in Antarctica. Fred fished less and studied the iceberg and the sea more. Other penguins spent much of their time with friends and relatives. Fred was a good husband and father, but he socialized less than average. He frequently went off by himself to take notes on what he had observed. You might think that Fred was an odd bird, perhaps the sort of penguin that others did not want to spend time with, but that wasn't really true. Fred was just doing what seemed right to him. As a result, he was becoming increasingly alarmed by what he saw. Fred had a briefcase stuffed full of observations, ideas, and conclusions. Yes, a briefcase. This is a fable. The information was increasingly disturbing. The information was beginning to cry out, "The iceberg is melting and might break apart soon." An iceberg that suddenly collapsed into many pieces would be a disaster for the penguins, especially if it occurred during the winter in a storm. Many of the older and younger birds would surely die. Who could say what all the consequences would be? Like all unthinkable events, there was no plan for how to deal with such a catastrophe. Fred did not panic easily, but the more he studied his observations, the more he became unnerved. Fred knew he had to do something, but he was in no position to make any pronouncements or dictate how others should act. He was not one of the leaders of the colony. He wasn't even a son, brother, or father of one of the leaders of the colony, and he had no track record as a credible iceberg forecaster. Fred also remembered how fellow penguin Harold had been treated when he once suggested that their home was becoming more fragile. When no one seemed interested, Harold tried to assemble some evidence. His efforts were greeted with,
"Harold, you really do worry too much. Have a squid. You'll feel better."
"Fragile? Jump up and down, Harold. Have 50 of us jump up and down at the same time. Does anything happen, huh?"
"Your observations are fascinating, Harold, but they can be interpreted in 4 very different ways. You see, if one makes the assumption..."
Some birds said nothing, but they began to treat Harold differently. The change was subtle, but Fred had seen it. It was definitely not a change for the better. Fred found himself feeling rather lonely. What do I do now? The colony had a leadership council. It was also called the Group of 10. Led by the head penguin. The teenagers had another name for the group, but that's another story. Alice was one of the 10 bosses. She was a tough, practical bird who had a reputation for getting things done. She was also close to the colony, unlike a few of her peers who were more aloof. Actually, all of their breed of penguins look a bit aloof, but they don't all behave that way. Fred decided that Alice would be less likely to dismiss his story than other more senior penguins, so he went to see her. Alice being Alice, he did not have to schedule an appointment. Fred told her of his studies and his conclusions. She listened carefully, even though, frankly, she wondered if Fred was having some sort of personal crisis. But Alice being Alice, she did not ignore Fred. Instead, she said, skeptically,
Take me to the place that you think most clearly shows the problem.
That place was not on the upper surface of the iceberg, where the melting and its consequences were hard to see, but underneath and inside. Fred explained this to Alice. She listened, and not being the most patient of birds, said, "Fine, fine, fine, let's go." Penguins are vulnerable when they leap into the water, because leopard seals and killer whales hide to catch careless birds. Without going into any unpleasant graphic detail, let's just say that you really don't want to be caught by a killer whale or leopard seal. So when Fred and Alice jumped into the sea, they were instinctively careful. Below the surface, Fred pointed out fissures and other clear symptoms of deterioration caused by melting. Alice was amazed at how she had managed to ignore these signs. Alice continued to follow Fred as he turned into a large hole at a sidewall of the iceberg. Through a canal a few meters wide, they swam deep into the heart of the ice, eventually reaching a spacious cave filled with water. Alice tried to look as if she totally understood what she was seeing, but leadership was her specialty, not the science of icebergs. Fred saw the perplexed look, so when they returned to the surface, he explained. To make a long story short, icebergs are not like ice cubes. The bergs can have cracks inside called canals. The canals can lead to large air bubbles called caves. If the ice melts sufficiently, cracks can be exposed to water, which would then pour into the canals and caves. During a cold winter, the narrow canals filled with water can freeze quickly, trapping water inside the caves. But as the temperature goes lower and lower, the water in the caves will also freeze. Because a freezing liquid dramatically expands in volume, an iceberg could be broken into pieces. After a few minutes, Alice began to see why Fred was so deeply concerned. The magnitude of the problem could be... This was most definitely not good. Alice was shaken, though she didn't show it. Instead, she asked Fred question after question. "I need to think about what you have shown me," she told him, "and then quickly talk with a few of my fellow leaders." Her mind was already plodding away. "I will need your assistance," she told Fred. "I need you to be prepared to help others see and feel the problem." After a short pause, she added, "And be prepared that some birds won't want to see any problem." Alice bid Fred goodbye. Fred felt both better and worse. Better, he was no longer the only penguin who saw the potential for disaster. He wasn't the only penguin who felt a sense of urgency to do something about the problem. Worse, he did not yet see any solution, and he did not much like the way Alice had said, "be prepared," and "some birds won't want to see any problem." The awful Antarctic winter was only 2 months away. Problem? What problem? During the next few days, Alice contacted all members of the Leadership Council, including Lewis, the head penguin. She asked them to go on the journey she had taken with Fred. Most listened to her, but they were very skeptical. Was Alice having a personal problem, perhaps with her marriage? None of those with whom Alice spoke showed any enthusiasm about the idea of swimming into a big, dark cave. A few council members could not even find time to see Alice. They said that they were busy with other important matters. They were dealing with a complaint from a rather loud bird that another penguin was making faces behind his back, a somewhat confusing issue since penguins cannot make faces. They were also debating whether their weekly meetings should last 2 or 2.5 hours, a hot issue for those who liked jabbering and those who did not. Alice asked Lewis, the head penguin, to invite Fred to the next Leadership Council meeting to present and defend his conclusions.
"After what you have told me about him, I am certainly very interested in hearing what Fred has to say.
the head penguin said diplomatically. Lewis did not, however, schedule time for a presentation by this relatively unknown penguin who had never before spoken to the group of leaders. But Alice was insistent, reminding her boss that they had to take some risks, which you have bravely done all your life. That was true, more or less, and Lewis was flattered to hear Alice say so, even though her motives were pretty obvious. The head penguin agreed to invite Fred. Alice did. In preparation for his meeting with the leaders, Fred considered writing a speech in which he would give statistics about the shrinking size of their home, the canals, the caves filled with water, the number of fissures obviously caused by melting, and so on. But when he asked a few of the older members of the colony about the group of 10, he learned that two of the birds on the leadership council loved to debate the validity of any statistics, and they loved to debate for hours and hours and hours and hours. These two were the more vocal advocates lobbying for longer meetings. One of the leadership council members would usually fall asleep, or at least come awfully close, during a long presentation with statistics. His snoring could be disruptive. Another bird was very uncomfortable with numbers. He tried to hide his feelings, usually by nodding his head a great deal. All the head nodding tended to annoy some other members of the group, which could lead to bad moods and bickering. At least two other council members made it pretty clear that they did not like to be told much of anything. They saw it as their job to be doing the telling. After much thought, Fred chose an approach to the upcoming meeting that was different from his original plan. Fred constructed a model of their iceberg. It was 4 feet by 5 feet and made of real ice and snow. The construction was not easy for Fred, especially since he had no hands, fingers, and opposable thumbs. When he was done, Fred knew it was not perfect, but Alice thought it was a very creative idea and definitely good enough to help the leaders begin to see the problem. The night before the meeting, Fred and his friends moved the model to where the leadership team met, which, unfortunately, was on the highest mountain of the iceberg. Halfway up the hill, the grumbling began. "Remind me why I'm doing this," was one of the kinder comments from his friends. If penguins could grunt and groan, there would have been plenty of both. The next morning, the leaders were already standing around the model when Fred arrived. Some were engaged in a lively debate. Others looked mystified. Alice introduced Fred to the group. Lewis started the meeting, as the head penguin always did.
"Fred, we want to hear about your discovery."
Fred bowed respectfully. He could sense openness from Lewis and some members of the group. Others seemed neutral. A few made little effort to hide their skepticism. Fred gathered his thoughts and courage, and then told the story of his discovery. He explained the methods he had devised to study their home. He described how he had found the deterioration, the open canals, the big exposed cave full of water, all of which had to be caused by melting. Constantly, Fred used the model to orient his audience and illustrate his points. All but one of the Leadership Council penguins moved closer to the model. When Fred removed the top half of the structure to show the big cave and explain its disastrous impact, you could have heard a snowflake falling on the ground. When the demonstration was completed, there was silence. Alice started the discussion by saying, "I saw all this with my own eyes. The cave full of water is huge. It's scary. I saw all the other signs of destruction that must be caused by the melting. We cannot ignore this anymore." A few penguins nodded. One of the leadership council members was an older, heavy-set bird named Nono. Nono was responsible for weather forecasting. There were two theories as to the origin of his name. One was that his great-grandfather had been called Nono. Another theory was that his first words as a baby penguin were not ma or pa, but no, no.
Nono was accustomed to being blamed for being wrong in his weather forecasts, but this business about the iceberg melting was too much for him. He spoke up, barely able to control his emotions.
I have regularly reported to this group about my observations of the climate and its effect on our iceberg, he said. As I have told you before, periods of melting during warm summers are common. During winter, everything returns to normal. What he saw, or thinks he saw, is nothing new. There is no reason to worry. Our iceberg is solid and strong, and can withstand such fluctuations.
Each sentence from Nono came out louder than the last. If penguins could become red-faced, which they can't, he would have been red-faced.
The iceberg is not melting!
Maybe I should back up before he explodes.
When Nono saw that the support of some of the others was turning in his favor, he pointed to Fred and said dramatically,
This junior bird says melting ice has opened that canal, but maybe it hasn't. He says the canal will freeze this winter and trap the water in a big cave, but maybe it won't. He says the water in the cave will freeze, but maybe it will not. He says freezing water always expands in volume, but maybe he's wrong. And even if all he says turns out to be true, is our iceberg really so fragile that freezing water in a cave can break it into dangerously small pieces? How do we know what he says is not just a theory, wild speculation, fear-mongering?
Nono paused, glared at the others, and threw what he hoped was a knockout punch.
Can he guarantee that his data and conclusions are 100% accurate?
Four of the birds nodded. One seemed to have become as mad as Nono. Alice quietly shot Fred an encouraging look that basically said, Things are fine, which she knew was not true. You can handle this, which was not at all clear. Now just go ahead and reply calmly. Which for her would have been difficult since she wanted to scream,
No, you nitwit!
Fred said nothing. Alice gave him another encouraging look. Fred hesitated, then said, Honestly, no, I cannot give you a guarantee. No, I am not 100% sure. But should our melting iceberg break into many pieces, it will be in winter, when it is dark both day and night. When the terrible storms and winds make us most vulnerable, wouldn't many, many of us die?
Two of the birds standing near Fred seemed horrified. He looked in their direction and said,
Wouldn't it happen?
Seeing that most of the leadership council still appeared to be very skeptical, Alice gave Nono a hard look and said,
Imagine parents who lost their children. Imagine them coming to us and asking, How could this have happened? What were you doing? Why didn't you foresee this crisis? It was your job to protect the colony. What would you tell them? Well, yes, sorry. We had heard that there might be a problem, but the information was not 100% credible.
She paused to let her comments sink in.
What would we tell them as they stood before us in unspeakable pain? That we had hoped such a tragedy would not happen? That it was not appropriate to act until we were 100% sure?
Again, snowflakes could almost be heard crashing onto the ground. Beneath her dignified exterior, Alice was so angry she wanted to take the ice model and throw it at Nono. Lewis, the head penguin, noticed a change in the group's mood. He said,
If Fred is correct, then we only have the remaining 2 months until winter begins to react to this threat.
One of the other penguin leaders said,
We need to form a committee from members of this team to analyze the situation and look into possible solutions.
Many of the birds nodded in agreement. Another one of them told the group,
"Yes, but we must do everything possible so that the colony's routines remain intact. Our chicks need a lot of food now to grow, and we need to avoid confusion. So we must keep this a secret until we have worked out a good solution."
Alice cleared her throat loudly, then spoke with a steely resolve. "When we have a problem, forming a committee and trying to protect our colony from unpleasant news is what we normally do. But this is far, far from a normal problem." The others looked at her. The unasked question on everyone's mind was, where was she going with this line of reasoning? Alice said, "We must immediately call a general assembly of the colony and convince as many as possible that there is a big problem. We must get enough of our friends and families on our side so that we have a chance of finding a solution that many will accept." Normally, penguins behave in quite a controlled manner, especially if they are leadership council penguins sitting in a meeting. But now a few of the birds went completely wild, all talking at the same time.
"An assembly? The risk is never. Have we a panic?"
"No, no, no."
"And what would we say?"
"Worrying them is very bad."
"Panic? Don't want to panic anyone."
"Must keep this a secret."
It was not a pretty sight. "I have an idea," Fred said cautiously. "Would you give me a few minutes, please? I won't be long." The others said nothing. Fred took that to be a yes, or at least not a no. He moved as quickly as possible down the mountain, found what he wanted, and climbed back up. The group of 10 birds were jabbering once again. They stopped when Fred arrived with a glass bottle.
"What's this?" asked Alice.
"I don't really know," Fred said. "My father found it one summer, washed up to the edge of our iceberg. It looks like ice, but it is not made from ice." He pecked on the bottle with the tip of his beak. "It's much harder than ice, and if you sit on it, it warms up, but it doesn't melt." Everyone stared. "So?"
"Perhaps we could fill it with water, seal the hole on top, and place it in the cold wind. Then, tomorrow, we can see if it is broken by the force of the expanding water as it freezes."
Fred paused as the rest of the group worked their way through the logic of his statements. He continued,
"And if it doesn't break apart, then perhaps you should not rush ahead and call an assembly of the colony."
Alice was fascinated. Risky, she thought to herself, but is this bird clever or what? No-No suspected it was a trick, but saw no easy out, and maybe it would stop all the foolishness. Louis, the head penguin, looked at No-No. Louis made his judgment. He told the others,
"Then let it be done."
And they did. Louis put water into the bottle. He sealed it with a fishbone that was just the right size. He gave the bottle to Buddy, a quiet and boyishly handsome penguin who everyone seemed to like and trust. And then they dispersed. Fred was always willing to stick his neck out if necessary, though it inevitably made him nervous, so he did not sleep particularly well that night. The next morning, when Buddy climbed up the hill, all the others were there looking down at him. When he reached the top, one of the birds said,
"Well?"
Buddy produced the bottle. It was clearly broken from ice that had grown too big to fit inside.
"I'm convinced," Buddy told them.
The birds jabbered for half an hour. All except two said that they needed to act. One of the two, of course, was No-No.
"You may be on to something," he said, "but..."
He was more or less ignored.
Louis said, "Let the others know we will have an assembly, Do not tell them the topic yet.
The colony's birds were curious about the reason for the assembly, but Alice made sure the leadership council members kept their beaks shut, which built up a bit of interest and suspense. Nearly all the adults showed up. Most of the talk was about normal life on their iceberg.
Felix is getting fat. Too much fish. Too little exercise.
Where is he getting all the fish?
Ah, now that is an interesting story.
Lewis called the meeting to order and quickly turned it over to Alice. Alice told of her swim with Fred, the many signs of melting, and the open cave filled with water. Fred showed his model of the iceberg and explained why he thought they were in danger. Buddy told the story of the glass bottle. And Lewis, as head penguin, ended the session by saying that in his opinion, they had to act, and though he was not sure how, he was confident they would find a solution. By the time everyone had a chance to see the model and the bottle up close, to ask both Fred and Alice questions, and to hear more from Lewis, the meeting had lasted most of the morning. The birds were stunned, even those who normally responded to anything by saying, "Well, yes, but..." The complacent sense that all is just fine, 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 thank you, began to drain into the vast ocean. Fred, Lewis, and Alice were certainly not aware of it. Professional change experts, they were not. But by reducing complacency and increasing urgency, they had taken exactly the right first step in potentially saving the colony. When the meeting broke up, the jabbering began.
The iceberg is melting?
So enough with the talk. Let's do something.
I never really liked Fred. Now I know why.
Stop complaining about missing lunch. Think! Why does this have to happen to me?
Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy. I mean, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. Javi, be real. Winter is only a few months away.
I cannot do the job alone. The next morning, a friend of No-No's slid up to Lewis. Penguins can slide on their stomachs, though it looks bizarre to humans. He suggested that as the head penguin, it was Lewis's duty to solve the melting iceberg problem by himself. That's what leaders do. You are a great leader. You need no help. The bird then slid, one might say slithered, away. Another penguin suggested that Lewis delegate the problem to the young birds who were the experts on ice. Lewis pointed out, patiently, that those birds had no credibility in the colony, had no known leadership skills, were very inexperienced, and a few were not well-liked. The bird making this suggestion said, "So what's your point?" Lewis thought about what next step he should take, then called Alice, Fred, Buddy, and a penguin named Jordan to a quiet spot on the northwest side of the iceberg. Jordan was known as the Professor, since he was the closest the Leadership Council had to an intellectual. If a university were located on their iceberg, Jordan would have been a tenured member of the faculty. The head penguin said, "The colony needs a team of birds to guide it through this difficult period. I cannot do the job alone. I believe the five of us are the best team for the task ahead." Alice nodded ever so slightly. Buddy looked confused. Fred was surprised that he, a more junior penguin, was being included. But the professor was the first to speak.
"Why do you make the assumption that the five of us can succeed?" he asked.
Lewis nodded in his normal, patient manner. Alice hid her irritation. If she had had a watch, which she didn't, she would have been looking at it while tapping her foot.
"It is a reasonable question," the head penguin said. "Look at the five of us, Professor. Define the challenge clearly. Make a list in your mind of each of our strengths. Deduce an answer to your own question. Lewis never talked this way, except when he was speaking to the professor. Jordan looked off toward the horizon. If you could have heard the thoughts flashing through his penguin brain, they would have been something like this. Lewis, head penguin. Enough experience to be wise, patient, a bit conservative, not easily flustered. Respected by almost all except Nono and the teenagers. Smart, but not an intellectual heavyweight. Alice, practical, aggressive, makes things happen. Doesn't care about status and treats everyone the same. Impossible to intimidate, so don't even try. Smart, but not an intellectual heavyweight. Buddy, boyishly handsome, not the slightest bit ambitious, well-trusted and liked. Maybe your wife likes him too much. Definitely not an intellectual heavyweight. Fred, younger, amazingly curious and creative, level-headed, nice beak. Insufficient data to judge his IQ. Me, logical, actually, very logical, well-read, fascinated by interesting questions. Not the most social of birds, but then why would anyone want to be a social bird? Thus, if the head penguin is A, Alice is B, Buddy is C, Fred is D, and I am E, then A plus B plus C plus D plus E clearly equals a strong group. The professor turned to Lewis and said, "What you say is remarkably logical." Buddy looked confused, as he often did. He never really understood the professor, but he trusted Lewis. Alice's irritation calmed a bit as she was once again reminded of why the head penguin was the head penguin. Fred couldn't imagine what went on in the professor's head, but like Alice and Lewis, Fred sensed they were on the right track. He also felt privileged to be working with this talented group of senior birds. They spent the rest of the day together. The conversation was difficult at first. "I wonder by what percentage our home is shrinking each year," the professor said at one point. "I once read that a bird named Vladiewicz created a method." Alice coughed twice, loudly. While staring intensely at Lewis, she said, "Maybe we should concentrate on what we are going to do tomorrow." Buddy said softly, "I'm sure Mr. Vladiewicz was a very nice bird." The professor nodded, pleased that someone was joining his conversation, even if it was only Buddy. Lewis redirected the dialogue. "I think it would help if we all closed our eyes for a moment." Before the professor could question the relevance of eye closing, the head penguin said, "Please don't ask why. Tolerate an old bird's suggestion. This will only require a minute." The others, one after the other, closed their eyes. Lewis said, "With your eyes shut, point east." After a moment of hesitation, all did so. "Now, open your eyes," he told them. Buddy, the professor, Fred and Alice all pointed in different directions. Buddy even pointed slightly upward toward the sky. Alice sighed, intuitively sensing the problem. The professor said, "Ah, yes, fascinating." Fred nodded ever so slightly. Buddy was lost. The professor said, "You see, for us, A plus B is additive. That is to say, more capable than two individuals by themselves, only if A and B can work as a team."
"Yet we responded to Lewis's task as individuals. He did not say we couldn't work together, could not talk or touch each other."
"You see, Flotbottom's theory of group..."
The head penguin interrupted the speech by raising his wing, then saying,
"Would anyone like squid for lunch?"
This stopped the overweight professor, whose grumbling stomach easily trumped his brain. Buddy said,
"What a great idea."
Penguins love squid, those sea creatures that come in sizes ranging from as large as a bus
like Jules Verne's monster in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, to smaller than a mouse. But the tiny squid, so liked by the penguins, are tricky little devils. They will shoot a very unappealing jet of black ink at a predator and then zoom away. So in a one squid versus one penguin matchup, the squid can easily win. Penguins, having discovered this problem many, many years ago, had found a solution. Hunt squid in groups. Lewis jumped into the sea first, quickly followed by the others. Although penguins wobble awkwardly back and forth on land, looking a bit like Charlie Chaplin, in the water they move with extraordinary skill and grace. They can dive a third of a mile beneath the surface, stay underwater for up to 20 minutes, and maneuver better than a $250,000 Porsche. But extraordinary individual capabilities do not a squid catch. The first squid they encountered actually escaped, but soon the penguins learned to work together well, coordinating their movements, surrounding the lunch. Eventually, enough food for everyone was found, even for the professor's rather large appetite. After a satisfying meal, Lewis led a discussion that rarely touched on the melting iceberg or what the five of them needed to do next. Instead, he focused on life, loved ones, and their hopes and dreams. They talked for hours. The professor was disinclined to just talk about life without structure around the conversation to give it some rigor, so he kept his beak shut and let his analytical brain work quietly. Melting iceberg. Fred finds it. Tough sell to a complacent group. Goes to Alice first. Shows her the problem. The ice model. The bottle. The group meeting. Complacency reduced. Lewis picks group to guide the effort. Interesting makeup. Turning non-team into team with squid and talk. All rather strange, but fascinating. The next morning, Lewis kept them together. He would have liked a month to turn the five birds into a close-knit team, but he did not have a month. So he did the best he could, and within 2 days, the penguins certainly looked much less like individuals pointing in different directions. Lewis had largely succeeded in taking the difficult but essential step of pulling together a team to guide the needed change. The Seagull. An impatient Alice suggested they search rapidly for solutions to their melting iceberg problem by talking to others in the colony. The head penguin was not sure that talking to others was the best next step, and the professor definitely did not see the point. But after a constructive discussion, Alice prevailed. One bird, who had the heart of a Texas oil man, suggested they drill a hole from the surface down to the cave to let out water and pressure. This would not solve the more general problem of the melting, but it might keep their home from exploding during the upcoming winter. This drill-a-hole idea was briefly discussed before the professor pointed out that with all 268 birds pecking away 24 hours a day, they would break through to the cave in 5.2 years. Next. Another bird suggested they find a perfect iceberg. No melting, no exposed caves, no fissures, just wonderful in every way, so that their children and grandchildren would never, ever have to face a crisis like this again. Perhaps if they appointed a perfect iceberg committee. Fortunately, Alice was not around to hear this. Another idea? Somehow move the colony toward the center of Antarctica, where the ice is thicker and stronger. Although none of the penguins had any idea of the size of the continent, more than 1.5 times the size of the United States, one very heavy-set bird said, "Won't that take us a long way from water? How will I get fish?" Next. One penguin on the leadership council suggested creating a sort of superglue out of killer whale blubber and using it to glue the iceberg together real tight. He admitted that this would not solve the more general problem of melting, but it might avert immediate disaster. They were obviously getting desperate. Then, an older and highly respected member of the colony suggested that they try something new.
"Maybe you should do what Fred did when he found our terrible problem. Walk around, keeping your eyes and minds open. Be curious."
The head penguin, recognizing the need for a different approach, agreed. "Let's try it," he said, and so they did. They went west. They saw beautiful walls of snow. They saw families doing things families do. They overheard conversations about melting and fish. They listened to birds who needed to share their anxieties. Then, after an hour or so, Fred, in his typically respectful way, said, "Up there."
"Look, maybe that's it."
Fred was looking at a seagull. Since normally there are no seagulls in Antarctica, they all stared. A small, white, flying penguin? Probably not.
"Fascinating," said the professor. "I have a theory about animals that fly. You see,"
before he could continue, Alice tapped him on his shoulder. He had learned in the prior 2 days that Alice tapping him like that meant, "You're wonderful, Professor, but please shut up," which he did.
"What is it?" asked Buddy.
"I don't know," Fred said, "but a bird can't fly forever. It must have a home on the ground. But it's so cold here."
They agreed. If the seagull tried to live with them, it would freeze as hard as a rock in less than a week. Fred continued,
"I suppose it could be very, very lost, but it doesn't seem to be afraid. What if moving from one piece of land to another was just the way it lived? What if it's a..."
Fred used the closest word penguins have for nomad.
Alice said, "You aren't suggesting..."
The head penguin said,
"I wonder."
The professor said,
"Fascinating."
Buddy said, "I'm sorry, but what are you talking about?"
The head penguin responded to Buddy by saying, simply,
"We are thinking about the possibility of a new and very different way of life."
They talked for hours and hours.
"If we... but then... how would we..."
"No, you see..."
"Yes, but we could..."
"Why not?
Just maybe..."
Buddy asked,
"So what do we do next?"
The head penguin said,
"We need to think this through carefully."
Alice said, "We need to move fast."
The professor said,
"But quality of thought is more important than speed."
Alice continued,
"First, we need to learn more about that flying bird, and now."
The head penguin agreed. The professor went looking for something to write on. Then they all went to search for the seagull. Fred had in him a bit of Sherlock Holmes, the famous non-penguin detective. So within a half hour, they found the seagull. Alice whispered to Buddy,
"Say hello to the bird."
In the warm and gentle voice that came naturally, Buddy said,
"Hi, this is Alice."
He pointed at her.
"That's Lewis, Fred, and the professor. I'm Buddy."
The seagull just stared at them.
"Where do you come from?"
Buddy asked.
"And what are you looking for here?"
The seagull kept its distance, but did not fly away. Finally, he said,
"I'm a scout. I fly ahead of the clan looking for where we might live next."
The professor began to ask questions. Useful questions, though he did go off on tangents occasionally, always brought back by you-know-who. In response, the seagull told the penguins of his clan's nomadic existence. He talked about what they ate, which, frankly, sounded to the penguins like just about anything. He spoke of what it was like to be a scout. When he began to turn blue and have trouble speaking, he said goodbye and flew away. The professor and Buddy were not totally convinced that what was appropriate for seagulls could possibly be right for penguins. We're different.
They fly.
We eat delicious fresh fish.
They seem to eat, well, yuck.
Of course we're different, Alice said with considerably more diplomacy than usual. That means we can't just copy them, but the idea is very interesting. I can almost see how we might live. We'd learn to move around. We wouldn't stay in one place forever. We wouldn't try to fix melting icebergs. We would just face up to the fact that what sustains us cannot go on forever.
The professor asked dozens of questions. Lewis said little but thought a great deal about the discussion and its implications. Alice said,
I wonder why someone didn't think of this idea as soon as we realized that our iceberg was melting.
The professor said,
Surely someone in the colony did. It is so logical.
The professor turned his head to the right. What he heard was,
Maybe we should pray to Roland the Round, the beloved founder of our colony.
If only we had cable TV.
Well, the professor thought, maybe not.
The head penguin said,
After living one way for so long, why should it be easy to think of a whole new way of life?
The professor realized that no one had offered a solid theory about why their home was melting. He had been assuming that melting and degradation must have occurred slowly over a long period of time. But what if that weren't true? What if something had caused the problem suddenly? But what could that possibly be? Should he have urged his fellow penguins to take more time and be more systematic in thinking about their iceberg problem? But there was so little time. Unanswered questions disturbed the professor greatly, but that evening he slept remarkably well under the circumstances. He believed the team had succeeded in creating a vision of a new future, and one that seemed plausible. He was beginning to see how they could create that future. He was oddly comforted that Lewis, Alice, Fred, and Buddy were thinking the same way.
A nomad colony, free with no fixed home. We can learn from the seagulls.
Getting the message out. The following day, Lewis called for a meeting at noon of the entire colony. As you would expect at this point, nearly everyone showed up, so there would be again no lunch for the increasingly desperate leopard seals. An energized professor spent the entire morning preparing a sort of 97-slide PowerPoint presentation for Lewis to use in communicating their vision. The head penguin looked over the material, which was very impressive, then gave it to Buddy. After studying the professor's work, Buddy said,
I'm sorry, but I'm a little lost.
Lewis asked where he had become stuck. Buddy told him it was on slide number 2. Alice shut her eyes and did deep breathing exercises. The head penguin looked again at the presentation created by the professor. It was, in its way, beautifully done. But Lewis kept thinking about how difficult it would be to help the colony understand his message. How do you talk to birds who were anxious, preoccupied, skeptical, tradition-bound, or unimaginative? Lewis decided he needed to try a different method, even though it could be risky. He did not like risk, but... Lewis began the colony's assembly by saying,
Fellow penguins, as we meet this challenge, and we definitely will, it is more important than ever to remember who we really are.
The crowd looked blankly at him.
Tell me, are we penguins who deeply respect one another?
There was silence until someone said,
Of course.
Then others said, Yes. Nono was in the middle of the audience trying to figure out what scheme was afoot. It was not obvious yet, which he did not like. Lewis continued,
And do we strongly value discipline?
Yes,
said a dozen or so of the elderly birds.
And do we have a strong sense of responsibility, too?
It was hard to argue with that. It had been true for generations.
Yes,
many now agreed.
Above all, do we stand for brotherhood and the love of our young?
A loud yes followed. The head penguin paused.
And tell me, are these beliefs and shared values linked to a large piece of ice?
When some not particularly bright birds, caught up in the yes, yes cadence, were again about to say yes, Alice shouted, No! She was quickly followed by the professor, Fred, and a few of the younger birds. Then many penguins muttered a
No, no, no
to themselves.
No,
Lewis agreed. The birds stood still, all looking at the head penguin. Some didn't know that he could speak so forcefully and so emotionally.
I'd like you now to listen to Buddy, Lewis said after another dramatic pause. He will tell you a story that inspired us to think of a new and better way of life.
So Buddy started to tell the seagull's story.
He is a scout for his clan. He explores the territory to find good places for his colony to move next. Imagine, they are free. They go wherever they like to go. You see, many, many years ago, they...
Buddy told what he knew of the history of the seagull clan, of the way they lived now, and of the bird he had met. Buddy wasn't aware of it, but he was a very good storyteller. When he was done, the penguins had many questions. Some of the slower birds struggled with the idea of a flying animal. Some just wanted to know every detail of what the seagull had said. There were many side discussions, especially about freedom and a nomadic existence. The faster birds were quick to see the vision without it ever being stated explicitly. Lewis let the jabbering go on for a while. Then he cleared his throat loudly and asked for order. When the noise subsided, he told the crowd with conviction,
This iceberg is not who we are. It is only where we now live. We are smarter, stronger, and more capable than the seagulls. So why can't we do what they have done, and better? We are not chained to this piece of ice. We can leave it behind us. Let it melt to the size of a fish. Let it break into 1,000 pieces. We will find other places to live that are safer. When necessary, we will move again. We will never have to put our families at risk from the sort of terrible danger we face today. We will prevail.
Nono's blood pressure hit 240 over 160. By the end of the meeting, if you could have carefully studied the eyes of the crowd, you would probably have concluded that 30% of the colony could see a new way of living, were convinced the vision had merit, and were relieved. 30% were digesting what they had heard and seen. 20% were very confused. 10% were skeptical, but not hostile. And 10% were like Nono, convinced this was all completely absurd. The head penguin thought to himself, Good enough for now. And so he ended the meeting. Alice grabbed Fred, Buddy, and the professor and said, "Follow me." Being sensible birds, they did so. She quickly explained her latest idea, to come up with slogans to be put on ice posters. "We need to remind the birds of what they have heard, and remind them all the time. The meeting this morning was brief. Some of the colony were not here. The message is radical. We need much more communication. Every day, everywhere." Buddy wondered aloud, "Will so many posters be annoying to some of our friends?" Alice replied, "Given a choice between a few annoyed birds and a melting, exploding iceberg with screaming penguins on it, I'd choose annoyed. Put that way." They began creating posters. At first, they struggled. But with the help of some of the more creative birds,
some of whom were younger than Fred,
they quickly got the hang of it.
Every day for a week, 20 penguins came up with new slogans and put them on ice posters scattered around the iceberg. When the birds could find no more places for the posters, Alice suggested they put them underwater, next to the most popular and productive fishing grounds. Sounds a little odd, but 1, penguins can see very clearly underwater. 2, there were no posters there yet. 3, when penguins look for fish, they cannot close their eyes, even if they are annoyed. The dramatic meeting, Lewis's "We Are Not an Iceberg" speech, Buddy's storytelling about the seagull, and Alice's countless ice posters began to have the desired effect. Many birds, though far from all, came to see and accept what they had to do. Communicating the new vision of a nomadic life, of a very different future, was for the most part remarkably successful. The colony had taken yet another big step forward. You could tell just by watching the birds. A nomadic life versus sitting and dying on a melting and exploding iceberg. Seems clear enough.
"Have you seen the latest slogan? It's actually funny."
"Which one?" "I'm considering becoming a scout."
"What does it take? Do you get more fish?"
"I think this is all worth trying."
"I still like the super glue idea."
Good news, bad news.
30 to 40 birds began to work in small groups to plan for the selection of scouts, the mapping of trips to find new icebergs, and the logistics of moving the colony. Lewis was cautiously optimistic. Over the next week, there was both good news and bad. Good, although some birds were still anxious, enthusiasm among the core group of planners began to grow and grow. Mostly good. Nearly a dozen birds expressed interest in being scouts, the job of looking for a new home for the colony. Unfortunately, the group was mostly made up of adolescents who showed less concern for finding a new iceberg than for putting more excitement into lives that lacked video games and Nikes. Not so good?
Nono and a few of his friends seemed to be everywhere forecasting storms and dangerous currents. Many penguins ignored them, but far from all.
Mysterious. A few of the very young penguins started having scary dreams. When Alice looked into the problem, she found that the kindergarten teacher had developed an affinity for telling the children horror stories about ghastly killer whales hunting young penguins. The nightmares caused much uproar among the parents, including some who were possible candidates to become scouts. Why was the good-natured teacher creating this problem? Not mysterious at all, but certainly not helpful. Some members of the leadership council thought the scouts would need a boss. When they began to lobby for the role of president of the scouts, irritating conflict among the council members grew. And finally, there was very troubling news. Penguins need a lot of food to build up fat for the winter. Someone pointed out that the difficult task of exploring the vast territory around the iceberg would